kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole. How are you doing?
I am emotionally wrecked from a game I got to talk about later.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get to that later.
That's why I was waiting for you to go on. I was like, I am not going to go ahead and start spilling those beans, but that'll give you something to look forward to.
Yeah.
It's just going to sit on me for the whole fucking show.
Man, that sounds fun.
Yeah.
In the meantime, we have a guest joining us this
week. Hi, guest. Are you emotionally wrecked?
I was hoping it was my game that you were emotionally wrecked about, but I'm anxious to hear that one as well.
Chandler Tomlinson of Koza Games, how are you doing?
I'm doing super well. How are you guys?
I'm okay. I mean, I'm dealing with Cole, but...
Yeah. That comes with its own burdens.
Just another one of these friggin' things. So you're here to chat about two things. One is just game development in general, and two is we're briefly going to touch on your game Circuits and Shields. It is a MOBA, so we're going to be up front. Neither Cole or I are into MOBAs, so we didn't really have any hands-on time with this. The game looks really, really cool. So please do tell us about what is Circuits and Shields.
Yeah, not into MOBAs yet.
I think is the hoping the this one will change it for us. Is you have console plans? That'll get us on.
No, we don't. Yeah. PC gamers only. I'm sorry. We run enough of a development issue just trying to make one platform. So. But yeah, just a quick brief introduction. We are MOBA for fans of games like League of Legends or Heroes of the Storm is kind of our two biggest inspirations. We've been in development about 4 years now. It started out as kind of a project that I said, hey, you know, I really want to do this for like a year, year and a half. We'll head to crowdfunding, verify the idea, and then get out without much time or money lost. And here we are 4 years later with a lot of time and a lot of money lost. So game development is every bit as difficult as everybody's told you it is. Just here to talk about that, kind of the journey throughout. If anyone, you know, is interested in what indie development looks like. Just talking about my actual game a little for those that may like MOBAs and hopefully we find a few fans here.
Well, where do you want to start? Should we start at the beginning 4 years ago? Where did the idea of the game come from?
Yeah. So ever since I was probably 16, 17 years old, I'm 31 now. So a long time ago. I've always wanted to make video games. I originally planned to go to school for it, got to college, and said, whoa, wait, programming is really hard. I don't know that I have the attention span for this. So I just backed right on out of that, and went into IT as a career. But that kind of, you know, passion for wanting to make a game never really went away. And there's posts of me when I was like 16 or 17 being like, hey, I've got this really great idea for an MMO. Someone help me make it. I'm 16. So, about a million of those posts out there. Obviously none of those ever panned out, but, about 4 years ago after, you know, you have a steady career, actually have, you know, at least a decent sized bank account that feels like you can support that. I finally said, okay, I think I have this figured out. I've been in, you know, IT long enough, business long enough that I think I understand what this takes. And just kind of naturally, I was playing a ton of League of Legends at the time. I think it's a natural fit when you think about indie game development. I'm kind of what I think is unordinary at this point in indie development of I really care about the money. And I think a lot of indie developers care about the idea. I absolute respect to those that have like this really cool idea and you see these just absolutely genius game mechanics and really cool, like passionate ideas. I said, wait a second, MOBAs, like that's a huge market. That is something that we can ideally get up, a game mode, some basic champions, like I said, in a year, year and a half and kind of spend that up and roll from there. So I love MOBAs, don't get me wrong. But it really was a market type thing on what kind of possessed me. And kind of the idea of playing a ton of games and saying, hey, I think I could do this a lot better. And I think that's kind of how every indie game starts.
I see what you're doing. I have ways that I can improve on that and make it my own.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everyone's gone through a game by themselves or, you know, gone through it with friends, and the whole time you're playing been like, I really like this, but man, I wish they did this way.
That's our whole job, is just to sit here and tell people what we
wish. Yeah, just to critique things. Yeah, and then it's, do you guys ever kind of get the itch to say, hey man, maybe I could do this better?
See, I think I could make them look better.
Yeah, Cole's an artist, so she,
I get annoyed. Oh, cool.
She could definitely get involved in the art side of things. I'm of the opinion, like, back on episode one of the show, our friend Kunal Majmudar was on the show to talk about a game called Pixel Noir. This is 8 years ago. The game still isn't out. So I know,
that makes me feel better.
I know how hard it is to get a game up and going. And I know I don't want to get involved in that. I don't have the time to do this show the way it is. I couldn't imagine the amount of time it would take to get into actually designing a game and making something happen. I'm just, I'm not that motivated. I'm too old.
My oldest daughter wants to be a game developer. And I always tell her, I'm like, you know, as an artist, I have to encourage you to strike out and, you know, stoke your creative side. But also as your mother, I have to tell you to get a job that's going to pay your bills.
Yeah, I think it really is such a, like, a hyper competitive industry. And I went to school at SMU, which is kind of notorious for this thing called the Guild Hall. And it's got a lot of people that, you know, it's basically trains you to go directly into the game industry rather than, you know, programming and then hopefully fall into game development. And even through that program, I saw a lot of people kind of struggle to get in the games that they wanted to make. So I think there's a lot of glamour around game development. You're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to work on the next World of Warcraft, or I'm going to work on the next League of Legends. And unfortunately, you probably are not going to work on that for a long time. And that's not to discourage anybody. It's just to say that it is super competitive. And I totally agree with you. I'm really glad I went the route of find a way to pay the bills and then try it. I think that's a lot better route that I would definitely recommend people to take here.
Do you think a lot of indie developers these days do it the wrong way and they just start off with the idea and they don't have any kind of financial backing or any kind of safety net, and they just... We've seen so many developers come on this show that just aren't around anymore, and it sucks to see.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of my things, I am not a programmer. I'm definitely not an artist. I'm not a marketer. I'm not necessarily a game designer. I'm not really any of those things. I'm just the person who happens to be good at kind of putting together people who are all those things. And that's expensive, but I think it's really a testament when you see people who want to develop and they are the programmer or they are the artist. And I think really being able to have that core kind of proof of concept or core, hey, I'm here with more than just an idea. This is something that I've put my blood, sweat, and tears into, I think is huge. But I think one of the hardest things that people don't always consider is, while I am super passionate about this project and I absolutely love everything that I'm doing here, no one else, save something really lucky, is going to feel as passionate about your project as you do.
Yeah.
And so you do have to have financial incentives, and you do have to have this idea of, hey, this game can be successful and can either, one, provide you the ever classic exposure to the game industry, which doesn't really sell very well, or two, provide some monetary gain now or in the future. And it's really tough, you know, because there are a million games that get started, like you said, and people disappear. It's, can I really say, hey, you get, you know, 2-3% of the profits that I end up making in the future? And it's like, well, how far away is the future? How much are the profits? What are the odds we actually get there? And so, yeah, again, I really hate to be discouraging because I love that I've done this. And it's one of the coolest things in the world to like see people playing your game and say nice things about it. I don't know that anyone said really anything rude about it, which is just an amazing feeling. but yeah, I mean, I cannot say enough, like, be prepared. It is so much harder than what you may think it is. Even with all the tools and nifty gadgets nowadays, it's just really, really hard. And I absolutely respect anyone who can, you know, spin up their own thing and make it all the way through.
Cool. So you are the director of the project. How big is your team? How many people are you lording over and kind of commanding?
So I am lording over no one. And so from the start, what I really wanted to focus on, and this is not like an egotistical thing, I likely have a little more money to play with than most indie developers. I was lucky, fortunate enough to get a great job. I saved a ton of money throughout my 20s, lived very cheaply and had, you know, kind of a war chest to play with when we started this. What I said from the start was, I am not making an indie game. I am making a indie developed game that I want people to confuse for a AAA game. So I said from the start, I am going to go out and find the artists that work at Riot, the artists that work at Blizzard, the artists that work at Ubisoft. And I'm going to say, hey, if you're not doing anything in the evenings, on the weekends, can you help me out on the side? And that's kind of the model we've run from the start. So we have absolutely zero permanent team members. There are some people that I rely on really heavily that may bill, you know, 20, 30 hours a week rather than five. There's been people that have been helping me out for a long time, but we don't salary anybody. We don't have anyone that's involved in royalties. We're not paying percentage of profits. So that said, I have at some point lorded over, I think we're at 120 unique people right now. I think I'm at 800 something individual PayPal transactions sent. Wow. Just to give you guys an idea of the scale. Yeah. So we've worked with about 120 different people from art, programming, marketing, just all sorts of cool stuff. And I really was able to get people from like some of our artwork. For example, our main level is from a couple guys that also work at Ubisoft. And that's why it looks so pretty, is because we happen to get just really top tier talent. So, that's been our model, and it's kind of weird. And it's so dependent on who you find, because I would say out of about 120 of those people, maybe 40 or 50, I'm like, dang, I wish I hired someone else for this, because this didn't work out very well. So it's a really cool model, that I think would work for a lot of people. It's just when you get into hourly type stuff, it gets really dangerous type of thing.
That's a really unique way to handle things. I haven't talked to many people who have just done it on a, like on a for hire mercenary style.
Yeah,
that they've done their game. And it's really cool to talk to someone who's done it in just a completely different way from what we're used to hearing about.
I'm curious how you get that many people to work on a project and then pull it together to make it look cohesive.
That is by far the hardest part. So that's a really, really good question. I would say the first probably 2 years of the project, I didn't realize how difficult that was. We would basically have, I would go through ArtStation and find the most badass concept artists I could find. And I was like, hey, like draw me a character. Here's an idea. Draw me this. And then I would have like five images of characters and I'd be like, wait a second. None of these even look remotely similar. Like these all look like they're from a completely different game. And then I messed up. I didn't have like a full-time art director. And so when we first made our level, oh man, it just was one of the ugliest things I've ever seen. And I was like, wait a second, this is not the style I had in mind. And they're like, well, you didn't really communicate what style you had in mind. So, I would say that is like 99% of my job right now is linking people up and trying to get that cohesive level. And now that we're an established project and we have a ton of, I'll call it collateral, it's a lot easier to get things cohesive. But even now, like when you start throwing in things like visual effects, I really want the same guy to do every visual effect because there's even just, you know, the slightest bit of difference, it really takes notice. So, yeah, I would say that's now what I'm good at and now what makes us successful to be cohesive. And we even miss the mark on that sometimes now, but it's definitely an adventure on that front.
It's pretty cool. Cole, any other questions? I don't know what else you have, and I don't know how much power you're going to have.
I'm sitting here watching it lightning, and I'm panicking with everyone.
Like, and now the power's gone. I want it to happen scary. While you're mid sentence.
I will cry. Let's go get my inverters back out. Get the generator again.
Yeah, get the generators.
Oh, Lord. Shit, I lost my train of thought on the art, too. Son of a bitch. Thanks, Joe.
We're good at our jobs.
Making me look real good at this shit. Now, well, your turn to ask a question since you fucked that up for me.
Oh, my God. Okay, so 4 years. The game is now out. Is it in early access? Is it in full release? How are you handling the release for the game?
Yeah, so luckily, it's 2021, and things like Steam and Unreal Engine and Unity and things have come a really long way, and they really streamline a lot of that process. Back in the day, you had to like build your own data center. Just to start spinning up servers and things like that, or it was hosted on someone's computer in their closet type of thing. So we are currently in what I'm calling early alpha. I don't want to call it alpha. I call it early alpha. We test every weekend. The game is on Steam. We're backed by this really neat Amazon service called GameLift, which kind of dynamically scales all our servers. We don't have to worry about any of that. And yeah, it's one of the best feelings I had throughout the entire process was that you add a product key in Steam and it's your game that shows up and you can hit the play button. And something about that, seeing your own thing on Steam is really, really cool. But yeah, we've been alpha testing for, oh man, probably 2 years now, almost every weekend for 2 years. I think I'm at about 300 hours played. And it's absolutely insane to see kind of how far the game has gone. And if you kind of go back on our Twitter a long time ago or kind of our old posts, you'll see us like, hey, we're almost ready for Kickstarter. We had a really, really good alpha testing session. We're really close. And this was 2 years ago. and I look at the game now and then, and it just a absolute night and day difference. Both from the artistic perspective and the gameplay perspective, the game is so much faster. It's more fluid. Our ideas have come such a long way. And I think, you know, for any people interested in game development or doing game development now, I cannot stress the idea of iterative feedback enough. I had this idea going into it of let's lay this absolutely beautiful foundation and groundwork. That way we're ready to add on to everything. And we laid that groundwork and it really was like really customizable and really well architected. And then we changed a ton of stuff, just so many ideas. I think we're on like V7 of our item system, for example.
Oh, geez.
I think we're on like V5 of different champions and different champion kits. And it really is a case of until people play your game or until you play your game, something that sounds really good on paper, it's going to change. And that's something I wish I did from the start was, hey, this doesn't need to look pretty yet. Let's get playable. Let's get people playing, and go from there. And I am blessed enough to have people who have been alpha testing with us for 2 years straight and have not given up on us despite some weekends we'll log in and crash 5 minutes in. And it's like, okay, this weekend's canceled. I really can't stress enough, get it playable, run through your ideas and see it in action because it really does make such a difference.
What type of feedback have you incorporated so far from people what have they suggested that's made it into the game?
Yeah. So, I am the only game designer in a sense on this game. And therefore I have this idea of, yeah, you know, I played League of Legends, I played Dota, I played Heroes of the Storm and this is what they're doing wrong. And so, like I said, in the item system. We basically got in, and while it worked perfectly in my head, it was like, oh, this is so simple. This is so streamlined. The first like five people that played, it was like, I don't understand this at all. Like what in the world is going on here? This is not displayed well. This is not streamlined at all. And it makes you realize kind of while you have this idea in your head, you've been thinking about that idea forever. So it's really iterations like that of people logging in and saying, yeah, I really like this game, but this feels weird. And it's really easy to have kind of a cognitive bias of, hey, this is my baby. This feels great. This is amazing. This map looks great. And then you have other people come in and tell you like, hey, this doesn't look that great. Or this doesn't play that well. And probably the number one example, is about this time last year. We were actually picking up some players. We were picking up steam. We had people consistently showing up. We had 10 people every week. But we kind of had a lot of complaints like, hey, this game feels kind of slow. It doesn't feel super responsive. And we could not figure it out. We would have like random crashes that we could just never, ever solve. We would have FPS issues, network disconnects, Slack, whatever it may be. And based on all that feedback, we kind of bit the bullet and re-architected literally everything into an Unreal system called GAS, which is a gameplay ability system. This literally shut us down for about 3 or 4 months.
Ooh.
And required thousands upon thousands of dollars to do. Completely reprogrammed almost every tiny little aspect of everything. But what that did is kind of gave us an outsider view into, okay, now we've been in development for 2 years, 2.5 years. What would we do better over again? Or what would we do over again to make it better? And we have a GIF, whatever you want to call it, floating out there on the internet.
Let's fight about that.
Yeah, let's
fight about it
that right now. That's probably
it's a GIF. God damn it.
Yeah, we have one floating out that is a before and after GAS implementation. And basically, we run through a champion combo. So you know, mash your QWER keys and auto attack people. And I literally think we picked up in like a 7 second combo, we got it down to like 3.5 or 4 seconds.
Oh, wow.
And it was like, holy shit. Like, did it really feel this unresponsive? And you don't really realize that playing it until you see the new version. And so, yeah, that's kind of the type of feedback. I wish that we hadn't gone so deep on that original system. Because if people just played it and said that early on, we could have nicked that in the butt. Like way, way, way earlier, probably saved a ton of money. So stuff like that is really where it comes in handy.
Damn. So Cole, it's hailing by you, huh?
Yeah.
You got to keep us updated on this. Don't just say it in Twitch
I'm
chat.
Just watching it out the window.
You got to keep us live updated.
I'm so scared.
This is part of the story now for the episode. This is going to be a running theme. We just want weather updates.
I'm concerned. Like I'm shell shocked.
Ask an art question.
There aren't any animations, are there?
You say animations?
Animation. It's a running joke. I really fucking hate animations.
Oh, like a drawn
pointy,
chin?
Yeah.
The chins of anime characters.
I don't know that we have any of those. I think we all have pretty rounded chins.
Okay. I'm double checking on your website just to be sure. I will send
I'm
in
checking
a complaint.
Now. You got me worried.
Yeah. You're like, oh, shit. Yeah.
I think
you're mostly okay. She's
yeah, we have one character that's a little anime based. I'm not going to lie. I am an anime fan. I think
I see one with a pretty sharp jawline, but you might be okay. We'll let that one pass. I am curious because I'm looking at the website and I'm looking at how many characters and stuff you have. And you were talking about how you were selecting artists, you know, going to ArtStation and just like finding programmers that worked with other developers and stuff. How do you keep your game reined in when it's developed over such a long period of time? How do you keep it reined in with all of these different inputs and stuff and not just go, fuck, I want all of it?
Well, I think that's obviously it. Honestly, that's a huge problem because I have multiple times said, fuck, I want all of it.
I don't know if you just heard that thunder, but it startled me. I'm sorry.
I did. I heard that.
I jumped. I hate storms. I'm okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you're good. I would be concerned too. I'm panicked for you. I think I've said this multiple times, and I think it's in like my final words on our Kickstarter that we're currently designing the page for. If I could go back and do all of this over and start over fresh from the start and get us to the exact same stage that we're at right now, I could do it easily in a quarter of the time and a quarter of the cost. And it really is just crazy how things spiral, because you do see things and you're like, you'll come across like a marketplace pack and you see like a really cool VFX, or you see like this really, really cool 3D model, and you're like, damn, I really want to use that in my game. And then you start thinking of ways to use it. And things just get really just out of control.
It just haunts you until you do use it. And then you find yourself 6 months later, like, I got to cut that bitch.
Yep. And the perfect example is I found this amazing 3D artist that makes some of the coolest characters I've ever seen in my entire life. He works for Ubisoft now, I think, or BioWare, one of the two, either way. Just some of the coolest characters I've ever seen. And he basically made his own characters. And I looked at him and I was like, dude, let me buy these from you and use them. And he was up for it. He let me use them. I paid a lot for them. Probably not a lot compared to the amount of work he put in them. But what I didn't realize is these were realistic styled characters. These were not stylized characters. And, you know, as an artist, I'm sure you know there's a huge difference between realistic and stylized. And so what I found out is I spent all these money on these characters, and then we put them in the game and it was like, wait, these look so out of place. And we had to do this whole other project to then take those characters, modify them into a stylized look. So I had to pay even more to do that. And two of those characters are not even in the game right now. So only one of those is in the game right now. So we did all that work. I bought all these characters. I shifted them away into stylized, and we're not even using them right now. And it's really just a case of a single champion in a MOBA has so many moving parts and so many things that it's kind of hard to realize just how much goes into it. So for anyone wondering for the real intricacies of game development, to spin up a champion start to finish, concept art, 3D model, sound, visual effects, animations, programming, it's about $6,000 to $7,000.
Damn.
And that is cheap. That is so cheap. That is literally begging people to work on our game and discount their prices. So just, you know, when you think about adding a new character and things like that, it just really adds up. And that is part of our sprawl, is we have a lot of piecemeal things that aren't fully done. So to answer your question, no, I've done a terrible job. I don't do that. Maybe that's the best way to put it.
Honesty is the best policy.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a ton of concept art and stuff like that that I will never, ever use again in my life. So, one day.
Oh, gee.
On the bright side, you do have that well to go to in the future.
Well, a lot of it. So, like, even like on our like press kit or something like that, we have old screenshots and old concept art that is 2-3 years old. And it is not pretty compared to what it is now. And I kind of look at some of our fans now that have been in here for 2 years, and I was like, what were you guys thinking? Why did you guys join in the first place? Because this is crazy. But yeah, a lot of old stuff in the bank that may never get pulled out the vault.
But it's there in case you need DLC ideas. Yeah. Or future the patch updates and
nostalgia updates. DLC, there you go.
There you go. The WTF DLC pack.
That's it. That's our one good idea for this show.
I'll take it. You guys need commissions, or how does that work?
Nope, we offer one good one for free.
Yeah.
That's all you get out of us. The rest are going to be shit, but you got one good one.
Our show's awful.
I think you guys got a cool little community here. It's pretty nice. I like it.
Yeah, I like our community. We have a nice group of people hanging out and chatting, keeping us company.
I wouldn't say all that about them, but they're there.
I'm trying to be nice, Cole.
I'm not. I'm sitting here shaking in my shoes.
You're looking at the viewer list like, fuck them, fuck them.
I know. I know these people. Okay. Fuck that one. Fuck that one.
Raider Biz, fuck that one.
And people have stolen codes from me and other channel giveaways. Terrible.
Oh, man. So, Kickstarter. You mentioned the Kickstarter. When is that looking to happen?
There are posts out there somewhere on the internet that say December 2018. I'm not even joking. I honest to God, and it's like a meme in our Discord at this point. I honest to God think we are a few months away. I think I've always wanted to be like 1000% ready, and I've really always kind of had this opinion that we are either going to just catastrophically fail this Kickstarter and we're going to get $100 donated and oops, Chandler, there goes 4 years of your life, or we're going to really hit the jackpot on this and kind of hit the right audience, and it's kind of spiral from there. So I've always been kind of had this concern of we need to be perfect before we hit Kickstarter. I really, really think we're close. We're looking at about 3 months. We just spun up kind of a marketing campaign. I think you guys met my new social media manager. That's how I'm on here. So we actually finally hired one of those. I am terrible at marketing. I hate it. I really, really do. I really hope 3 months, and we're going to be kicking up kind of our outreach programs coming up here, in the next couple weeks, probably, because we're finally at a stage where, we're getting new people in to play, and those new people are sticking around. I think that's been, the biggest indicator of, oh my God, we might do this. We had a new people join over the course of 2 years. I think we've handed out 400 something alpha testing keys. And right now we have the same 7 people show up every week. And the other 393 are gone. They're just gone. They kind of gave up on us. So we're finally at the stage where we're seeing people come back. And like our latest stream highlights and the latest videos we've put out, I'm smiling and laughing the entire time. It's been a huge amount of fun. We have people requesting, hey, can you guys scale the servers up now? Because we really want to play right now, which is the first time that's ever happened. So 3 months, I hope. I really, really hope.
Nice. What is going to be the goal of the Kickstarter? What are you looking to accomplish?
We are going big. We are looking at 100,000 on Kickstarter, which is way more than most indie games go for. Pretty much the average is around 30 to 50. But like I said, I think our scale and everything, kind of warrants the 100,000, and we've put a lot of investment and things into it. And I think the way that we can grow kind of warrants that. So, it's really nerve wracking for those that don't know. Kickstarter only funds you if you make 100% of your goal. So if I sit there, Circuits and Shields Kickstarter last day, last hour, and we're at $99,000 and it ends, we get absolutely no money.
Yeah.
Everybody gets refunded. So it's really this careful tiptoeing of, I want to set this high enough to make sure we succeed, but I also want to make sure I set this high enough to make sure I'm going to get anything to begin with. So that's the goal we set. And Lord help us, we make it. I'm nervous, very nervous.
What kind of things are you looking to offer as rewards for Kickstarter?
Yeah, we went absolutely nuts on the rewards.
That's what I like to hear.
Yeah, yeah. We really,
how many plushies? I want the plushies.
We do not have any plushies.
Son of a
we tried
bitch.
I'm sorry. We tried to steer away from physical gifts because they're expensive and kind of operationally, it's kind of a pain. I like the idea of a plushie, though. I may run with that. I'm writing that down right now. I'm not even joking.
He got two good ideas.
What is I really like that idea. I think the only physical stuff we have is like a mouse pad and a poster, which I'm not super thrilled about. So maybe I'll replace one of those with a plushie. I like that. I think we have like 15 tiers total, and each tier has like a minimum of 4 rewards. So we went on a ton of like cosmetics, emotes, sprays, skins, mounts, accessories. We've got one thing that when you die, you shoot up money in the air and it gets shot down. We've got a disco ball that rains money everywhere. We went real crazy on the cosmetics because fortunately they're a little cheaper to produce than a full character. So yeah, we've got just all sorts of cosmetic items, and then we've got some cool stuff. Like there's a guy, which I highly recommend to go check him out. His name is Jorge Shadowbox. If you Google that, you'll find it. But he does these really just badass wooden boxes, and he like layers an image inside the box, and as the light reflects on the box, it like shows the image differently, so it looks 3D. So one of our top rewards is one of those boxes. And then we've got things like working you into the story for the game, or you can make your own champion, or you we've got like a memorial map, so your name gets kind of tattooed on these stones underneath our map. So yeah, we took a ton of feedback on ideas, and yeah, when we release the rewards, if you're in our Discord, you can see all of them right now, what we're offering. But when Kickstarter launches, we have kind of a showcase showing them all off, and I'm super happy with it. I think people will like it for sure.
That sounds awesome. I am excited to see what kind of cool rewards there are. And, maybe if I win the lottery, I'll like, I've always wanted so badly to support a Kickstarter at the level where it's like, design the character. It's like, you're in the game. I want to do that so bad. But I can't afford that.
Well, you are not alone. I wouldn't want to do that either. What we've done, and this is for anyone who may not have financial resources to do something like that. This was a great idea from someone. Is we started up what's called a social campaign or a social share campaign, and this is going to launch a couple weeks prior to the Kickstarter. And essentially what happens is as you like our post, share our post, join Discord, wishlist the game, save it wherever, you earn points. And for every point you earn, you will unlock a reward. So you can get Kickstarter exclusive stuff just through helping us out by sharing the game. And for example, we have one guy in our Discord. He's my absolute best friend, best internet friend who I've never met in my life, but man, this guy is my hero. He has referred 475 people to our Discord.
Wow.
Up until like 2 weeks ago, our Discord was 800 people. He was responsible for over half of the people. And he sent me a message. He's like, "Hey man, I really want this reward tier." And I was like, "You already get it. You really, there's no money needed here. I will literally give you whatever you want." Find a game you like, guys. Find something you want to support, something you feel passionate about, and do what this guy did. just having him in the background for encouragement. He showed up at every test. He always gives us compliments. He's never said anything negative. Sometimes I wish he would. And be that guy. And to me, that is by far the best way to get into indie development. We're always looking for ideas. We're always looking for things we can add or change. And I really take a lot of pride that our members, their feedback gets heard really well. And a lot of our feedback for the game has been like the developers of Circuits and Shields really, really take feedback, and you will see it the next week in the game because they react really quickly and change things. So, we are not alone in that. So if you don't like MOBAs, that's fine. I don't care. Go find a game, support somebody with your time, with your effort. And that's really all they can ask for. That's so much. I'm not going to say it's better than money. Money's better, but do that either way.
Well, you mentioned staying in touch with you. Where can people stay in touch with you and what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I'm the worst marketing person in the world. We don't have what's called a marketing funnel. I just learned that term like 2 weeks ago. So sorry, everybody. The best way to contact us is through Discord. We're really trying to foster this Discord community. We update everything there. I've gone like 4 months without posting on Twitter before. Our website has like 3 articles because I forget. My wife has been running our Instagram. I think there's 3 pictures on there right now. So join Discord, talk with us. We've got like a few people that are just really passionate about the game, including myself. And we're really trying to build, you know, not just an indie development community or a Circuits and Shields community, but also an indie development, a MOBA community and things like that. So hop in our Discord, introduce yourself. You can even apply for alpha testing if you really want to play. It's super easy. We accept almost everybody. I'm going to give that secret away right now. If I see your name and you can type a sentence, you're pretty much accepted. So, hop in our Discord, hang out with us, talk with us. And as you can tell, I love talking. So we're happy to have you there.
Awesome. Well, is there anything else that you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up? I know we've been chatting for a while. I don't want to take up your whole night.
No, that's quite all right. You guys are awesome. I really love these kind of smaller podcasts and things, smaller communities that you guys are doing. So any way I can support you, I'll definitely link you in Discord and things like that. But for anyone listening, you know, if you're kind of tired of League of Legends, kind of tired of Dota, whatever it might be, definitely come check us out. I think we've got some really, really cool ideas. We're not just cloning, but we also stick close enough to the basics, where we're not completely reinventing the genre. So I'll just do the quick little sales pitch here. Our main game mode is called Circuit Ball. So if you've played Star Wars The Old Republic Hut Ball, you'll be super familiar with it. But if you haven't, it's just this really weird mix of like Ultimate Frisbee. Apologize about the dogs.
Puppy.
Ultimate Frisbee, Rocket League, and then League of Legends. So if you like any of those things or the combination of that sounds fun, it's like this capture the flag, throwing the ball around, running around. It's a ton of fun. So if any of those things interest you, come check us out, play with us. We've got some really cool videos so you can see what we've been doing lately and kind of what we've got going on. So yeah, that's the whole sales pitch. That's all I got. I really do appreciate you guys for having me on here.
Well, it was a pleasure having you on chatting with us. Cole, did you have any other questions? Anything else you wanted to ask about?
No, I don't think so. The storm has scared all the questions out of me.
Oh, Cole, what are we going to do with you?
I don't know. Move me somewhere where the weather's better.
Yeah, not Kentucky.
I mean, it's your fault for being in Kentucky to begin with.
I can't even be like, I was born here because I was adopted and then brought here.
So dragged.
You were kidnapped and you've just never left. It's Stockholm syndrome at this point.
I don't know how to walk on flat land.
Oh, shit. Well, Chandler, it has been a pleasure having you on the show, chatting with us, hanging out. Again, go check out Circuits and Shields. You could hit up circuitsandshields.com and find out more about the game. And, yeah, it's been great having you on. Do you have any final words before we let you get going?
I'm good. Thanks again, guys. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Have yourself a good night.
Yep. You too. Thanks.
All right. That was fun.
Yes. Yes, it was.
It was a good chat, even though you are dealing with the storm.
And the number 2 and number 3 come out of the room and I'm like, we're scared. And I was like, yeah, me too.
Well, should we try speed running through the rest of what we got to do?
Let's get through it.
All right. A lot of news this week. Big news, too. Of course, we got to start things off. Game Pass is in the headlines again.
Yeah.
A lot of games added to Game Pass, a lot of games coming to Game Pass, and some surprising additions. April 8th, we got Grand Theft Auto 5 is back on Game Pass.
Okay.
And then Zombie Army 4 Dead War.
I look forward to that because I might actually convince Duda to play it with me now.
And the funny thing is, we were just praising PlayStation Plus for having Zombie Army Dead War, and what does Game Pass do?
I am not surprised at all. Get
Zombie Army Dead War. Granted, you don't own Zombie Army game or Zombie Army through Game Pass, like you kind of do with PlayStation Plus, but
yeah,
kind of. I mean, you got to be subscribed either way.
Yeah, sure.
And then Cloud Gaming got Disneyland Adventures and Rush at Disney Pixar Adventure. So if you've wanted to play either of those on your phone, now you can.
Yeah, not bad.
April 12th is getting NHL 21.
Okay.
So hockey fans have a lot to look forward to. Then April 15th, PC is getting Pathway, which I haven't heard anything about that game. And then console and everyone is getting Rain on Your Parade, which I am super excited about.
Is that embargoed?
Yes.
Fuck.
Yeah. So let's just celebrate the fact that it's coming. I haven't played it, so I could be as excited as I want. You can't say shit, but I can say whatever the fuck I want.
I'm excited or not, but
I'm excited because I I haven't played it. I don't fucking know. I could be wrong. And then April 20th, the big thing that everyone has been talking about this week, Xbox Game Pass is getting MLB The Show.
Woo!
What the flying fuck world are we living in? Where a PlayStation developed game is launching on Xbox Game Pass.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
2020 like left some residual fuckery and we're all just sitting here in 2021 going, what?
I have to imagine Sony is like super pissed about this. They were like, listen, we didn't want to make the game for you guys to begin with. MLB made us. And now you guys made a deal with MLB and you guys look awesome and we look like shit. And because let's be clear. They didn't make this deal with PlayStation. They made this deal with MLB.
Correct.
Because MLB is the publisher for the Xbox version of the game.
Yep.
So yeah, they made a deal with MLB and it's coming to Game Pass April 20th.
Ooh, there goes the thunder again. A lot of people are excited. And I think it's about time y'all get some good baseballs on Xbox other than just, what is it, Super Mega Baseball?
Yeah. And
RBI?
For the RBI only isn't that good.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it could be worse, but it could be better.
The show Game Pass. The show on Game Pass. What the fuck? Oh, my God. Like, that's been known for a week now. It was last Friday. I'm like, oh, yeah, they had to come out with the news the day after we do the show.
That is the curse of our Thursday show.
Hey, I've wanted to move it to Fridays, and you're like, we do stuff on Fridays. Bitch,
I got things to do. Yeah. I got a family.
Not all good news, though. Some stuff is leaving Game Pass. On the 15th, we are losing Deliver Us the Moon, Gato Roboto, and Wargroove.
All good games.
Yeah.
So it is a bummer they're leaving. They've all been there a while, right?
Yeah, they've all been there a good amount of time, yeah.
I still need to do Gato Roboto, though.
Well, that one's only like $6, so I just bought that one.
It's been on my list of I'll get to it eventually.
And then a bunch of games, surprisingly, are leaving EA Play on April 16th. It looks like they are clearing the vault. Madden 15, 16, 17, 18, and 25 are all leaving, as well as NHL 18 and 19. So if you still play any of those, sorry.
That is pretty normal for them to do. Like every so often, they just clear out some of the really old ones.
I think this is the first time EA Play has purged any old stuff.
No, it's not.
What else have they gotten rid of? Because Madden 15 is, I think, as old as it is, isn't it?
A couple of years ago, they did a good wipeout of, like, hockey and stuff that was old. Hmm. Yeah. It's usually like, 5 or 6, and it's usually always an older one.
And Arita Biz saying Shadows of the Damned got removed, but I think that was a licensing thing and not really, like, a purge of old shit that no one touches anymore.
It typically happens when they're about to close the servers for it.
I think some of those are already closed.
They may even be.
Yeah.
So they tend to go hand in hand.
Yeah.
But it has happened before. I do remember specifically it happening before.
All right. PlayStation Now is getting some more games for April. We're talking Game Pass. We got to talk PlayStation Now as well. Some good stuff getting added. Permanent Edition is The Long Dark, which is neat. And then until September 29th, they're going to have Borderlands 3.
Okay.
That's a pretty good addition. Mm-hmm. And then until July 5th, so only a few months for this one, Avengers.
Hmm.
So maybe they're finally going to get Spider-Man in there?
Hmm.
July 6th when Spider-Man released.
Right the day after they remove it.
Maybe this will get more people playing Avengers. Can't go wrong trying, at least. They need to do something to get the player base up.
Yeah, that game has struggles.
Yeah. Anyway, E3 2021 will return this June in digital form and has been backed by Nintendo, Xbox, Capcom, Konami, Ubisoft, Take-Two, Warner Brothers, and Koch Media. So it looks like E3 is back in, I don't want to say better than ever, but they're back.
It's back. The best it can be, given things.
Circumstances, yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm not upset about it. I'm looking forward to it. I really can't wait to see what Xbox throws out there this year.
I wonder if they're going to have like an actual physical conference to like an empty theater or to like a half filled theater, or if they're just going to go with a digital presentation.
I don't know. Maybe they'll all go for the Devolver Digital route.
Oh, that would be good. Get Don Thacker to do everybody's E3 conference.
It'll be an E3 cinematic universe. Yeah.
All right, that's our third good idea this episode.
We're rolling. I think the storm did something to us.
Aki saying, you guys ever mentioned that the suicide of Rachel Foster's Xbox achievements work now? Well, there
pretty
you go.
Sure, she did mention it last time she was on.
Did she? Well, if yeah. not,
but yeah, she news. Said she had to redo the whole game.
Yeah,
which is trash because it's a trash game.
Some sad news: Lego Star Wars: The Skywalker Saga will not be making its planned spring release date. Traveler's Tales game says more info will be provided as soon as possible, but it is looking like that'll be a fall release, I guess.
Okay.
Bummer, but I'm looking. I know Jacob's looking forward to that one because it's Star Wars, and I like my Lego game, so I'm looking forward to that too.
Yeah, the girls enjoy them. I blank on them.
Well, they've put out so many.
Yeah, at this point, I've played a few of them because I've done a few reviews on them in the past, but I'm just like, I don't understand what's happening here. The girls tell me everything, and I'm like, that seems reasonable. Do I press A to jump? Okay. That's all I need to know.
Oh, man. If you are going to get Lego Star Wars Skywalker Saga, get it at Best Buy because they're going to have a steelbook. Of course, I had to mention that, right?
Yeah. I'm not
surprised. Final Fantasy XIV has surpassed 22 million registered users. I'm one of them. I just need to get back into it.
Which one is it?
Final Fantasy 14, the online one. Oh,
14, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't ever play that one.
I mean, you can play it on PC.
The only one I've played was Crystal Chronicles. That's the extent of my Final Fantasy scene.
You need to play more Final Fantasy games.
And I didn't even get to play the... You know what? I need to do that. I need to buy that.
What?
The new Crystal Chronicles, the remake. Because I keep forgetting about it, and, like, I don't... It's only on Switch, and I don't ever fucking touch the Switch.
Well, fucking touch the Switch.
But I don't wanna. I don't wanna, you can't make me.
Let's see what other news. It was announced that Augusta National and the Masters will be featured exclusively in the new EA Sports PGA Tour. So it looks like the Masters is coming back only in EA Sports. I guess that explains why they constantly remove the custom Augusta courses from PGA 2021.
I didn't know that was a thing they did, but it makes sense.
Yeah, since they have the Create a Course, people make like the real life courses, and Augusta is super, super protective of its course. So they make people, like, they make them remove it all the time.
Yeah, it seems legit.
Aki saying, isn't Final Fantasy 14 only on PC? No, it is also on PlayStation 4, and I believe they just started testing for the PS5 version. Still nothing on Xbox. Fuckers.
Crystal Chronicles is the only good one anyway.
No, there's a lot of good Final Fantasies. A lot of really, really good Final Fantasy games.
I keep being told that. But then there's Fantasy Crystal 6. Chronicles.
Play Final Fantasy 6.
Wouldn't I need a PlayStation to do that? That's gross. Say you're sorry.
No.
Oh, is it on PC?
I don't know what it's all on. You could emulate it. It was Super Nintendo. Shit.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Anyway, Deathloop has been delayed once again to September 14th.
On September 15th, they're going to announce it was canceled. And then on September 16th, Xbox is going to be like, check out our new game, Loop Death.
I wonder if this is going to affect the exclusivity deal, or if Xbox is going to be like, all right, it's 6 months now.
Maybe. No, I figure they'll hold to it.
Yeah, but
although I imagine delay. That getting fined for breaking the contract probably would be cheaper. They could afford it. They don't give a fuck, but it would be negative press.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, well.
Just don't like negative press.
Some rumors. I'm not sure if you heard about this one, but there are rumblings that Battlefield 6 will be a day one Game Pass title. Have you heard that?
I had not. Damn. Yeah. I'm not going to hold
my. It makes sense because it's EA, and yeah, EA Play is already part of Game Pass.
But EA has never launched anything into EA Play. It's always like 7 months later. So that's a tall order. I'm not gonna put any eggs in that basket yet.
I wouldn't be surprised given what
I'm not saying
Microsoft has been doing for Game Pass. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm just saying it's unlikely.
Well, that's why it's a rumor.
Yeah.
The other rumor, this one has been picking up steam throughout the day. The current rumor is that Hideo Kojima is in talks with Microsoft to publish his next game.
I mean, people saw that Death Stranding action figure on Phil Spencer's shelf. So yeah. That's a thing. And he's got a fondness for sneaking things into the background. 1S or Series S. So it's not impossible. Again, improbable. I'm also of the frame of mind that like everybody's going to lose their shit if it does happen because it's Kojima. And I'm going to be over here like, for whatever it is. But if people would be excited, you know, people would be excited for it.
Oh, like, God,
people would lose their shit. But I don't know. I tend to think that his games are given a little more credit than they deserve. But hey, there's always room for improvement. We could see.
It would be interesting, especially since Kojima has stated his displeasure for Xbox in the past and why he sided with Sony with Death Stranding. But apparently, I don't know if it's just money the talks, sales so. Through money talks.
Money talks, and if Xbox's board of directors like plunks down a couple of suitcases full, he'd be an idiot to go nah. You know, I mean, nothing would say he had to make a good game, just a game.
Oh my God! But yeah, that's the news I have. Anything else you want to talk about?
No,
nothing.
No, I'm good. The only thing I knew about was Deathloop, and well, I already made that joke, so here we go.
Loop Death. Oh, God. All right, are you ready for reviews then? There's not too many this week.
Yeah.
You ready?
Yeah.
Good to go?
It's still storming.
Still storming? Yeah. You want to do them tomorrow?
No, I'm good. Let's get it over with so I can, like... I already anxiety puked, so let's go.
All right, first game to talk about tonight is called Outriders. A code was provided to us by Square Enix for the purpose of this review, which is par for the course for every game we talk about on this show, but they really want us to stress it with their games. So yeah, Outriders, given to us by Square Enix for the purpose of this review, released April 1st on Xbox One, Series X, PS4, PS5, and PC for $59.99. Developed by People Can Fly, published by Square Enix, forgot to say that. Square Enix and People Can Fly present Outriders, a 1-3 player drop-in, drop-out co-op shooter set in an original, dark, and desperate sci-fi universe. Cole, tell us about Outriders, because from what I hear, it's our last damn chance.
Yeah. I don't know. I've played other games that are very similar, and I felt like this was just another not last chance. that's not to like say that's a bad thing. It's just that the entirety of my time with Outriders was spent going, that's very Division. That's very Destiny. And it definitely felt like it was pulling on. There was even one character where I was like, that's very Borderlands. You could just see the influence of other looter shooters taking hold in Outriders. You play as a character who's been put in cryo. You get to customize them, male, female, all their appearances, everything. So for the sake of this review, I'm going to keep referring to mine as a she, because that's, God damn it, that's what I did. So she comes out of cryo 30 years later. The world that they were promised that they were going to develop has gone full on war. Shit has hit the fan. Nothing is good. and she discovers whichever one you're playing as, doesn't matter. But your character discovers that they have been awoken in an altered state. And so they have some special abilities, which affects the way that you carry on combat throughout the game. Again, I'm going to have a really hard time not comparing this to The Division. That's my fault. I fucking love The Division. So that is my touchstone.
Should I have had Aki on this one? Or are you just going to talk about The Division the whole time?
No. But I'm saying that's my touchstone for this genre. And so as I played through and my character like unlocked her abilities, and it was like, oh, I recognize how to use these kind of things because I've seen them before. You have four different play styles that you can choose. I've heard people really enjoy the Devastator, which is like the tanky play style. I picked the Trickster because I am unapologetic run and gunner, and I cannot help myself in any game I play. I don't care how much I'm supposed to take cover and shoot, I'm in somebody's face. It's just the way that I like to play a game. I have
done that. You should have been the Devastator, shouldn't you?
Well, you would think, but the Trickster has close quarters combat. So they have the SMG. They have, like, the Devastator is a tank, which they can get up in your face. But, like, for the Trickster with the SMG and stuff, they can, like, run up on enemies. And one of their abilities is to, like, swipe with this magnetic field that just destroys whatever's close by. And so I would, like, run into a group of enemies and then I would just hit that and it would swipe out and everybody that was around me would die instantly. It was a little overpowered, and given that the Trickster also gets a shield for kills, I was just like running up to everything and destroying it and not feeling at all guilty about it. One of them is the Pyromancer, and for the love of God, I can't remember what the fourth one is. I'm sorry. If there's anybody that plays that fourth role, they're going to be yelling at me in chat. I'm going to ignore it.
I want to say I'm sad that there's four classes, but it's a three-player game.
This is what I thought was really odd, and the fact that it is three-player, capping it at three is always an odd choice to me. I don't understand why developers will do that when four has kind of just become the norm. Capping it at three feels odd. Absolutely beautiful in environment until it goes to shit, and then it's a war zone, and then it looks like a horrible, gross war zone. But it is really well done. I really liked the design of the environments and everything. Don't know who was really pissed off and created the character or the like animals in the world. I think they need therapy. Those animals are a little weird. But everything else, it looks really cool. The way that loot is distributed is kind of frustrating for me. The game uses a world tier system. Again, familiar with world tiers. But my experience with them is play the game and then once you beat the main story, you go into world tiers and you can move them up and get better loot as you go. Whereas for Outriders, it starts you off in world tier one. And then as your experience upgrades, you unlock the higher world tiers. And then there's an option, and it's the default for it to automatically move you up to the next world tier. So you may be a level four, and it goes, well, hey, you did fine up to here. Let's put you up to normal difficulty now. And if you're not ready for that to happen, you're going to get your shit handed to you.
I got my shit handed to me.
I had to go back in and lower the difficulty. I was like, I'm playing by myself for most of this. I don't have the energy to deal with what's happening here. And it was when it levels up those world tiers, it definitely cranks up the amount of enemies that are there. And let me tell you, it does not matter. Even if you are on story difficulty, those fucking grenade throwers will pinpoint you every time. They never miss. The snipers never miss. The AI needs a little bit of a tweak. Even the normal like riflemen and stuff will peg you quick. And it really needs a little bit of balancing done. The AI should miss at least a little bit. I know they're in a war zone. They've had a little bit more practice than the chick who's been in cryo for 31 years. But they will definitely put you down in a hurry. It does, on one hand, though, force you to get creative with using your skills and abilities, because they do have cooldowns, and so you'll need to, you know, take into consideration, do I have enough time to let that cooldown expire before I can get into this fight, or do I have to just hope for the best? Although sometimes it does not matter, it doesn't give you a choice, because those motherfuckers are the masters of flanking, and it didn't matter what I did, there was always somebody on my side. It's very obvious the game does not want you playing alone. It wants you to have people watching your back, and it makes it incredibly difficult if you are. Again, though, with the world tier system, your loot, the chances of getting the good loot is better the higher world tier you're in. So when you're playing and you're unlocking those lower tiers, you're getting shit armor and stuff too, which again makes it more difficult when it does auto boost you up. You have a chance to get good gear, but it's next to nothing. And the initial two levels, it is nothing. It might as well be negative at that point. But it's
Aki is rapid firing questions.
So many questions, and I'm like, I don't know. She's asking them so fast, I can't even process them. All I can see is just chat going pop, 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 pop with question marks. So, but yeah, I enjoyed the story. I enjoyed the game, but I definitely want to run through it more with friends as opposed to spending as much time in it alone as I did.
No, let's handle some of her questions. Are there romantic choices in the story?
I don't know. I didn't get to anything like that. I was just shooting things, Aki. All I wanted to do was shoot things. I shot everything I come across. I didn't care.
Are there pettable animals?
I shot everything. I didn't.
I don't remember any animals being in the sanctuary.
No, I didn't see any. Like, the only thing I remember interacting with is the one that it, like, wants you to try to tag in the beginning, and I scared it off.
Yeah.
And I think that's scripted.
Is it a real game, or is it just a microtransactions hellscape? There is no microtransactions, is there?
No. No, I don't think so.
They were very clear that this is just, it's a game, and what's there is there, and they're, if they do any DLC, it's going to be big, meaningful stuff, but there's no microtransactions right now. I don't know if they plan on adding them. I hope not. I think that would fuck up a really, really solid game. Like, this is a game I had mixed hopes for. Like, I was interested in it, but I canceled my pre-order, but I was still kind of interested in it. And then they announced it was coming to Game Pass, and I was thrilled about it. And I've been putting time into it, and I'm having a blast with it. I want to play with people, but I hate playing with strangers.
Yeah.
And this game is so reliant on playing with other people.
Yeah, it really is. And my problem is I don't always have a good time to just sit down and play. If one of my biggest complaints is that you can't even pause if you're playing alone.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's problematic because if I am playing alone, I generally I have kids running around and making noise and pets need to go out and come in. And, it's a whole ass thing. I want to just be able to save and there or pause. And there were times I unpaused because I thought it was paused. And then I come back and I'm like, oh, I'm getting my shit wrecked.
Yeah, I tried pausing at one time and realized I couldn't. So I didn't try it again.
Yeah.
That's on
you. I do it out of habit.
Totally on you. I will say
I do like their fast travel system. Basically, there are just beacons throughout the map. And if you plant a flag at the beacon, then you can fast travel back to it. I did like that the fast travel system is there from the jump.
Well, it's $60. What do you think of Outriders?
I think it appeals to the looter shooter niche. I think it does a good job at it. The servers are shit. even the couple times I did try to play it with people, I even tried to play it with number one a couple of times, and we were like, we're on the same damn network, and it couldn't connect. I they know that though, and they're working on it, so it's kind of hard to be like, that's a problem when they know.
Yeah.
But I do think. If you're not into looter shooters, it's not going to change your mind about the genre. It's very much cut and dry. This is the kind of game it is. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But, I want to go with a more recommended try it because I don't think it does anything to draw in new players who wouldn't play something like this.
Yeah, I have a hard time giving it a buy it, mainly because it's on Game Pass, so there really isn't a need. It is
there is that too.
A very highly recommended try it because it's on Game Pass. There's really no reason not to try it.
Yeah, if you even look at it and you go, I mean, it's pretty and it's interesting.
The writing could be better.
Yeah. There were a couple times where the voice acting, I was like, that could have been pieced together. This is much better.
The intro paragraph where it's like, it's our last damn chance. I'm like, come on, really? It was so generic. The story, the writing isn't anything to write home about. But
yeah,
Jordan's saying there's a demo as well. So really, any platform, there's a demo. There's no reason not to try this game.
Yeah, my biggest thing is just that it's not going to shake up anything, and it may find itself in the realm of forgettable looter shooter in 6 months, 9 months, or whatever. But if you're just going to play it on Game Pass, then hey, if you enjoy it, you enjoy it. Go for it.
I don't know. I think this one might have legs.
You think?
I think so.
I guess it kind of depends on what they do with in-game.
It's people can fly, and they haven't really done anything really shitty.
Yeah.
So I don't expect anything shitty out of this. From what I've seen so far, it's solid, which is what I expected. I think it might have legs. I think it could hang around for a while, and I think being on Game Pass is a huge benefit.
Oh, absolutely.
100%. Massive benefit. Very smart of Square. So.
Yeah.
All right, next game to talk about is called It Takes Two, developed by Hazelight, published by Electronic Arts, released March 26th on Xbox One, Series X, PS4, PS5, and PC for $39.99. Plays the clashing couple Cody and May, two humans turned into dolls by a magic spell, together trapped by a fantastical world where the unpredictable hides around every corner. They are reluctantly challenged with saving their fractured relationship. Cole, I'm guessing this is the game that had y'all torn up all day, huh?
It did. It fucked with my emotions.
I'll tell us about It Takes Two.
That's a good thing, though. So I wanna preface by saying that number one and I played It Takes Two together. We both played it online where she was on her Xbox and I was on mine, and then we also played it local split screen just to try that out as well. Let's give a short summary of the game. Basically, the premise is that May and Cody are getting a divorce, and their daughter Rose is understandably upset about this turn of events. Rose has made a small wooden doll that resembles her mother May, and a small clay doll that resembles a little less, but still somewhat like her father, Cody. I say that because Cody's, like, human form is your average, like, 30-something dude, right? And then, like, the clay version of him is a little short and rotund. And it's an absolutely adorable character model. But it doesn't look like the human form of him at all. At least with Mace, like, you can go, yeah, I can see where that looks like her because her hair's up in a little bun and stuff. But the clay model is definitely went more for the adorable factor than a one-to-one, if you will. So Rose being upset, she begins to cry while holding the dolls. She makes a wish. She has found a book of love at school in the trash can, and she makes a wish while the book of love is nearby, and her tears drop onto the dolls. And at this point, the spirit of her mother and her father wake up trapped inside of these wooden and clay dolls. Now, one character will play as May, or one player will play as May, one player will play as Cody. You have to have two players, no matter what. It's in the fucking title, people. It takes two. You have to have two people because the types of puzzles that you will encounter throughout the game require one player to carry out a task while another player is carrying out a second task, and everything needs to come together beautifully, and you need to work together to make it actually solve puzzles. Man, this is going to be hard to describe without giving away anything in the game. Holy shit. First off, what a fucking dense game. We got through an insane amount of the story. We played maybe 5 hours straight the first game. And we were just like, okay, we have to be getting close to the end. This seems very much like it's the end, right? And then the game just goes, oh, you...
Chapter two. No.
It doesn't even, like, break it down like that as you're playing it. It's all very seamless. And so it just keeps going, and you're like, how? How is there more story here? It's not in that kind of way as to, like, you're like, oh, I wish it was over with. I'm tired of playing it. You're excited to see what the next level is because it's all just been so absolutely insane up to this point. Like, it starts off very mundane, right? You're like, oh, you have to fight against the vacuum cleaner because May promised she would clean the vacuum out and she didn't. And so this is a source of contention in May and Cody's relationship, right? That seems reasonable. But then there's a part where you're like flying in a hang glider made out of Cody's underwear from some squirrels with a glass eye who had sent in a robotic wasp to become queen of the wasps. Do you see how it gets really weird really quick?
Yeah,
and I'm not even
odd.
Giving you spoilers here. This isn't even the spoiler stuff. This is all like in the beginning. And it just the nature of the two characters being so small lends itself to some incredibly creative puzzles. Now, those puzzles would be all and well and good on their own. I play a lot of ugly games, and I'd be like, hey, it's fine if the game was ugly. But It Takes Two goes, hey, we've got a creative concept, we've got a creative set of puzzles, and you know what would really make this the ultimate unique experience? Making it fucking gorgeous. And it is. There were times where number one and I would just stop what we were doing and be like, hey, just come over here and look at how the fish look. And we would just sit there and talk about how the fish looked because it was so incredibly beautiful.
That's a gorgeous game.
Throughout the whole thing, there's a fucking Rainbow Road reference level. And you're just sitting in it, looking at it, awe-inspired, because it's so pretty. I keep flying off of the rails sections because I'm distracted wanting to look at everything. It's so incredibly pretty. And it has an actual good, you know, story with a solid emotional plot. It's a reasonable thing to see how these characters behave and go, yeah, that sounds like something you could do in that kind of situation, even though it seems like it's such an off-the-wall scenario. I mean, the military squirrels with a glass eye are a thing, right? And yet, even the tiniest little interactions between May and Cody and these other characters that they encounter, they all feel realistic and believable. The voice acting is absolutely top notch. There are a lot of times, even in major AAA titles, where, well, we were just talking about it in Outriders, where the dialogue just doesn't fit right, you know? There are times where you go, oh, you can definitely tell they recorded those at different times. Somebody's got a morning voice going on, you know?
We've been there.
Yeah, like, you can tell that it's not dialogue that's flowing properly. Never throughout It Takes Two did I stop and go, wow, that was kind of an awkward moment, wasn't it? Like, it all just flowed beautifully. More AAA games could look at It Takes Two and take a page from their book. They really knocked it out of the park. There's accessibility options. There are accessibility options based on which character you are playing. there's speech. The subtitle sizes are options. You can turn off vibrations, things like that. When you beat the game, you can actually go back. Not only is there chapter select, but there is scene selection, and it tells you what you missed.
In yes.
That game. Holy God. Motherfuck. Why don't more games do that? Every time I see it, I just want to sing from the rooftops about it. Like, fucking, there's no excuse to not do that. And here it was. It was just like, because there's hidden mini games in the levels. There's 25 of them in all, if that tells you how many fucking levels are going on here. There's 25 mini games. And number one was like, oh yeah, we definitely found them all. We got them all. And when we loaded that bitch up after we beat it, and we had 14 of them. I was like, yeah, we got them all right. And she's like, how are we ever going to find them all? And then it was like, oh, no, this one, you missed this scene, dumbass. And I'm like, fuck yeah, I can live with that. Yeah, I don't know if I can sing the praises for this game loud enough. Like, if it weren't storming, my disabled ass would crawl up on the rooftop right now and be like, bye, It Takes Two. It's incredible. Because I was expecting it to be good. Don't get me wrong. But I wasn't expecting it to be this good. And I was so happy with it.
Nice.
Yeah.
One thing we do have to point out, this game is mandatory to players. So if you don't have someone to play with, sorry.
Yeah, you absolutely have to have somebody else. Can be local, or it can be online, but you have to have somebody else.
Well, $40 on It Takes Two, what do you say?
Oh, I don't know. Let's just say maybe it deserves a buy it. No, it fucking deserves a buy it. This is like top notch indie game.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, next game is called Last Oasis, developed and published by Donkey Crew, released March 26th on the Xbox Game Preview for $29.99. Keep moving, the world is dying. In this nomadic survival MMO, you can build walking mobile bases to travel to new lands, join up with a clan, and fight for territory. Resources deplete fast, so grab your sword and get ready to scavenge, pirate, and trade to stay alive. Paul, tell us about your time with Last Oasis.
I got punked by the shiny of a cinematic trailer here. First off, let me point out that Last Oasis on Xbox is currently pre-alpha build. It's rough around the edges. That's okay. I played the shit out of Ark while it was pre-alpha, and I didn't mind. I played the shit out of Conan while it was in game preview. I didn't mind. Last Oasis is in-game preview, and I don't mind. It is a survival game. Create a character. The world has gone to shit in such a way that 365-day year is the equivalent of... Well, one day is the equivalent of a 365-day year. Basically, the Earth doesn't rotate on its axis anymore. So a day is a trip around the sun. This leads people to become nomads, constantly trying to move across the Earth so that they stay within the realm of twilight, so that they're not ever fully in the dark and not ever fully in the sunlight all the time. For whatever fucked up reason, though, they like to throw their younglings out to the desert as a coming of age, rite of passage type of thing. And they throw them out there into the desert with nothing, and they have to build their first firefly machine. The fireflies are the walkers that are used when you're just getting started. I'd like to tell you I've built some incredible monster machines. I haven't, because this is a survival game, and you don't do anything quickly in a survival game.
No.
It's very much pick up the rocks. You can punch the trees. They don't give a fuck in Last Oasis. This isn't Ark. You cannot punch them down. But you need to pick up rocks and collect fiber, and eventually you can get a stick and hit things with the stick. Then you can get some wood from the trees. A little counterproductive. I don't know how you hitting a tree with a piece of wood gives you more wood than trying to punch it, but whatever. It's a game. Things happen. And then eventually you can craft a hatchet. The nature of it being a desert, though, there's no water. The only way that you can get water is you have to learn to craft a stove, you have to chop down some cacti, and then you cook the cacti to get the water out of it. I'm not sure about some of the physics that happen in this game. There's a little bit of shade on the logic. We'll roll with it, though. I guess when the Earth doesn't spin on its axis anymore, anything can happen. You have to cook the water. Then, of course, you make a bottle out of wood, which is another odd one to me. But you make a bottle out of wood to put your water in. Of course, it's going to fucking leak. So you need to get more knowledge, which you can get from finding things that you can do research on. Research is basically just walk up to something and press down on the D-pad. And then it goes, yay, you got a fragment. I don't know what the fuck the fragments are or anything. Like, the world building has its moments where it's there and you're like, oh, that's a really cool concept. And then some of the things, like the research and stuff, you're going, okay, they kind of phoned that one in. But again, pre-alpha, they've got time to fix it. We're not trying to rush it or anything. I will say that this is not a pretty game by any stretch of the imagination. There's how do you pronounce it? Is it Rotu? I think is the enemy type that you'll run into early on. And it's basically just like a chimpanzee with a stick looking kind of thing. When you beat it, the body ragdolls. And then there's like, even though the body's laying there with a skull attached to it, magically a skull and entrails will pop up sitting beside of it. And you have to loot that. But then you'll get the pelt from the body that's laying over there, which is weird. It looks bad when you're trying to do that. That also leads me to my number one actual complaint, though. Like, okay, I can handle a game that doesn't look great. That's fine. But my actual complaint is that the precision you need to actually pick things up or to interact with things in this world is like pinpoint. And I killed so many of them goddamn monkeys. And I was like, I guess you can't loot them because they're a monkey? Because
it wasn't pinpoint enough.
Yeah, but you have to literally like stand in just the exact spot and look down at just the exact spot, and then maybe it will pop up with the option to loot. And it was like the seventh or eighth one before I finally looted one, and I looked back at the trail of monkey corpses behind me and was like, son of a bitch! I got robbed because I wasn't walking back for all those. it could be a little frustrating. I will also say, there is no private gameplay, and there is no, like, unless you're, I don't know if dedicated servers are an option. I assume so, but I was playing on an official server. There's people just dead set and ready to fuck you up. I was in the very, very newbie area, and then, like, here goes somebody flying by on a big-ass machine, and I'm like, I haven't even figured out how to get a stick yet. Please don't kill me. And seeing as there are achievements, the achievements are already live in it. That's crazy. But there are achievements for 1,000 human kills. So 100% there are people who will like just sit there and wait for the noobs to spawn in and get fucked up. That's a problem. I hope somebody quickly comes up with console commands so that people can get the achievements and that's not an issue anymore.
Oh, geez.
There's also the issue of when you're going to leave a public server, your body and your machine become vulnerable. So the game just straight up tells you, drive to the edge and hope for the best.
Wow.
So if you're going to play and actually make any progress, you ain't sleeping.
Oh, man. Well, the game is still in preview, so there is time to work on stuff like this.
Yeah.
It's $30 right now. Is this something that is worth investing in right now? Should people wait on it for a little bit? What are your thoughts?
I'm going to go with a wait on it. I'm cautiously optimistic. Look, Ark was fucking rough when it first came to Xbox. And I see Last Oasis making a lot of the same mistakes. But I'm hopeful that there's potential because it could be such a really cool concept if they smooth it out. No. We're pre-alpha. There's still plenty of room to go.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
All right.
I should check my character. I bet they're dead.
I hope they're dead. Just to spite you. I hope your character's dead and buried and... We got to move on. We're bringing Aki in. Aki, how are you doing?
I'm pretty good.
Just pretty good? That's it?
Yeah, well, I only had 4 hours of sleep, so... Well, not even that, about three.
What is sleep? What is this that you're talking about? I've been trying to keep characters alive in Last Oasis. I don't know what sleep is.
Yeah, and that's why you get those types of games right there. No, thank you.
Well, Aki, you got one to talk about yourself. You ready?
I guess so, yes.
All right, next game to talk about is called Scarlet Hood and the Wicked Wood, developed by Devespresso Games, published by Head Up, released April 8th on Steam for $14.99. Scarlet Hood must lead a hapless munchkin troop through the Wicked Wood. Too bad the Black Witch Lefaba doesn't take too kindly to strangers gallivanting in her domain. Oh my god, they win points just for saying gallivanting. Our fledgling witch soon realizes she's reliving the same day. Can she overcome the disaster that awaits at every turn? Aki, tell us about Scarlet Hood and the Wicked Wood.
Okay, you play as a girl named Scarlet. She lives in the normal world. She and her band go out to try and make it big, and she gets the chance at a contract. Not the whole band. So they get pissed off and toss her out of their vehicle on the way home. And then suddenly a tornado happens. And now she's in a weird, weird, fucked up world. And yeah, she ends up becoming the Scarlet Witch, one of five witches in this world. And when she landed in this world, she crashed right into a wagon and sent it into the ground, even no less. Somehow survived that. But as payment for destroying the wagon and likely a lot of the shit that was in it, she has to escort this group of munchkins through this evil forest because she also took out the bridge in her fall that was supposed to get them to some royal coronation or some shit like that. And you're like, okay, well, I don't really have a choice because I don't know where the fuck I am and none of this makes sense. So, okay, I'll help you. And then you get crushed by a bird. Literally, a giant dodo jumps on your head and kills you.
Okay.
Yes. And then you suddenly wake up and you're like, what the fuck? And then you go about what all the stuff that you had previously done, only for it to happen again. And then your character wakes up again. They're like, wait a minute, something is fucked up. Because only she realizes time is being redone. No one else there seems to know. And then she ends up being told by this little fairy, hey, yeah, you have 7 lives. Once you're out of them, when you die, you're fucked, basically. The prior Scarlet Witch, Red Witch, whatever they call it exactly, had cast a spell to whoever became the next one would have these 7 lives so they could figure out what the hell they're doing, basically. So they just wouldn't immediately die and then not have a witch again, because apparently that's a big no-no in this world, even though there wasn't a witch for 4 years prior. So basically the entire story is just Scarlet trying to get through this fucking dark forest where the Black Witch lives. That's the entire thing, is just her trying to fucking survive through this without wasting all 7 of her lives, which is nigh on impossible. Because, I mean, she uses 2 or 3 of them just on the dodo, just trying to figure out what the hell's going on. And then as she continues, she comes across new enemies. And every time that happens, she automatically dies and goes back. And then you have to figure out a way of trying to deal with this new enemy. And I assume that just keeps happening. The thing is, for every special enemy that kills you, you have to go to this new area of this forest that you start at to prevent them from being able to kill you, basically. And they give you 3 different options for each one, which is really unique. And you can only do one of them, obviously. One is to make, and I love this, one is to make your whomping stick stronger. That's their magical staff. It's a whomping stick, and for her, it's literally just a broom that has a hand attached to the top of it, and basically it's paper, rock, scissors is what the hand does, and that's the powers you get for it, basically. And they just call it the whomping stick, and it just flies around and beats things up.
Word.
Yeah, so you can choose to upgrade that, which I assume makes your character just better at magic in general. Then you can also you can sabotage the enemies in various ways. I haven't actually managed to do that to any of them. And then there's also there were 4 prior heroes that came to try and save a princess, and they all died in this forest. You can bring them back somehow to help each one to help you with one of the enemies in the game as well. So those are the 3 different ways that you can get through each enemy, which is, I really like that. It was really unique. To upgrade your weapon, you have to actually find a bunch of journals and then find the super hidden thing in the level in order to get into a special room to upgrade it. And that requires you to find 5 different journals. And then there's also another 5 journals in every level, I guess we'll call it, that tells you about the hero, basically their journey and what became of them, so you know how to help them better. And so I really like the concept behind that. I would really like to be able just to do all 3 items, just to make life faster. But because of that, there is replay value, because obviously you can mix and match however you want. Like, you can upgrade your weapon once and then find 2 people and then sabotage or whatever. I'm just trying to do all the same one in my playthrough, so I'm just upgrading the Whomping Stick because I like the word Whomping Stick.
Everybody loves a good Whomping Stick.
Exactly. Fantastic. And that's really the story behind it, is you're just trying to get through this fucking forest. The gameplay is mostly just walking around picking up items and then using them. It's effectively a point and click, except for you move your character. So there isn't any actual combat. So as you're upgrading your Whomping Stick, it's all cutscene where the stick beats things up. You don't actually do it. Throughout the levels, you find enemies that shoot poison darts at you, and occasionally enemies that come down and try to attack you. You have a dodge button that takes up stamina, and there is a stamina bar, and you can run, which also takes up stamina bar, and you can dodge their attacks. You have 5 hearts, and if you take damage, one of the hearts goes away, and once they're all gone, you restart at the last checkpoint you were at, which is pretty nice. The big issue I have with that is the hearts don't fucking refill in between levels, so if you lose all but one heart in the very first area, well, now you have to go find healing items or buy them, which there's only a limited amount of money in the game, so that's really a pain in the ass. Yeah, it's a very pretty game. Scarlet is dressed kind of like a hoe, which is... I honestly, because of the way she dressed, I really expected this to be a dirty game, but it's not a dirty game.
Aw, poor Aki. She didn't get the dirty game.
Yeah, it's sad. It's so sad.
It says Wicked Wood. It's got to be filthy, right?
Yeah, between that and how she was dressed, I'm like, okay, this is going to be some filthy fucking game. I'm going to love this. I still love it, but it's not a filthy game, which is kind of sad.
It's not SML After Dark, but...
yeah, sadly.
It is sitting at $15, so what do you think of this game on Steam?
I think your first playthrough is probably going to take you 8 or so hours, and if you want to see all the different options, you're going to have to play through it 3 times. So I think this is a great price for, you know, the amount of time you're spending in it. So I'm all for it. I think it was really good. And the voice acting is pretty funny on the few parts that actually have voice acting.
All right, sounds good. Well, that is it for you, so I guess we will let you get going. I'm sure Cole would say goodbye, but I think she got disconnected by her storm. So.
Well, I was also the last one, as far as I'm aware, so...
Well, through the magic of editing, I should have Norg up next, but do you have any final words before I let you go?
Farfig Newton.
All right, and finally tonight, we are bringing in our good, good, dear friend, Mr. Norg. George Novick, how are you doing?
You know, I got to ask you something. You said this is the final thing, but given episode 666, is it the final thing at the beginning, or is it the final thing at the end?
It's at the end.
Oh, are we back to normal again?
Yeah, it's just back to normal. Yeah.
Oh. So I can't do that weird reverse talking bullshit anymore.
I mean, if you could pull it off live, I would be really impressed.
Yeah, that's not happening. Offline, I'll tell you about the process of what I had to do to make that sound.
I have an idea, and it blew my mind when I heard it. I'm like, oh my God.
It was like trying to learn a foreign language in 5 minutes.
It was beautiful. Oh, I loved it.
It was fun. I had a good time with that.
Yeah, that's why I love doing stuff like that, because it's like that and Grant doing the birthday theme when that episode was there. I love having you guys just do weird, fun shit.
It's a good thing, too, because that's pretty much all we do is weird, fun shit.
Yeah.
Speaking of weird, fun shit, how about this game?
Yeah, we got one more game to talk about tonight. Are you ready for this?
I'm so ready you don't even know.
All right, final game to discuss tonight is Kingdoms of Amalur: Re-Reckoning, developed by Kaiko, published by THQ Nordic, released March 16th on Switch for $39.99. Uncover the secrets of Amalur, from the vibrant city of Wrathir to the vast region of Dalentarth, to the grim dungeons of the Brigandhall Caverns, rescue a world torn apart by a vicious war, and control the keys to immortality as the first warrior ever to be resurrected from the grips of death. We've covered this game before. I loved it because I loved Amalur when it first came out. What did you think?
From the grips of death. Yeah, Amalur, man. I loved it. I got to get this out of the way. I loved it when it first came out, and I played it a whole bunch on Xbox 360. And that was right about the time when I was drifting away from console gaming. And basically from when the Xbox 360 came out and Amalur came out up until the Switch came out, I pretty much wasn't doing much gaming at all. So it's almost like I got to pick up where I left off on console gaming. And it's pretty much exactly like I remembered it. I loved it when I played it the first time around. And I'm probably a good 20-something hours into it this time around on Switch. Nice. So I like to give the games that I review for you a lot of time. And because it was Amalur, I had to just dive right into it and obsess about it, because it's still just as fun as I remember. I know that some of the critics at the time that it was released then were pretty savage about it in terms of like bugs and whatever. So when I found out that there was a Re-Reckoning version, I figured, oh man, I'm going to have to jump on it. And then you showed up on my doorstep and said, hey, you want to review this thing? And you didn't have to ask twice. That's for damn sure. For the record, when Joe asked if I would review a game, I said, sure. He didn't even tell me what game I was reviewing. He just asked if I wanted to review one. And I said, yeah, no sweat.
Yeah, you were gung-ho for anything. Like, I could have given you the worst game possible, and you would have been like, yeah, let's do this shit. But instead, I gave you Amalur. Oh, and then you were like, are you for real?
Oh, yeah.
Are we going to get some wet pancakes?
Wet pancakes. All right, so Kingdoms of Amalur: Re-Reckoning on Switch. Where should we start? I do three categories of reviewing. I separate my reviews into the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I'm looking over my notes here, and I kind of want to start with the ugly to get it out of the way. All because right. There's a lot to say about the game itself and the port, and I'm just going to kind of intermix between the two things. So let's get the ugly out of the way. First things first. I think something that I did not expect from a game that was originally released in, what was it, 2012?
Something like that. I don't want to think about it.
Okay.
It makes my back hurt.
It goes back at least six moons. So, yeah. A game that came out in 2012 and operated on two generations ago of consoles, I think, if I'm counting right. I expected that a remastering and a re-reckoning of the game would not contain some of the things that I disliked about the 2012 release. The frame rate drops were absolutely unforgivable for a game that is as old as this is, that is being ported to a system as new as this. Granted, that system is the Switch, so I acknowledge that I am not having any type of expectation that the performance level would come out of the current Xbox or Sony consoles, or even PC for that matter. However, it was released in 2012. We're 9 years away from that, and frame rate drops just killed me. I couldn't believe it when I was seeing it the first time, or the second time, or the third time, or the fourth time, or the fifth time, or the sixth time, or the seventh time, or the eighth time, or the... Anyway, you see where I'm going with this.
Just a little, yeah.
Okay. Load times. Load times for a game this old are inexcusably long. The end. That's it. There's absolutely no rationale for a game with load times that I would say are comparable to Skyrim on Switch, which I also recall not liking very much. But yeah, load times for a game of that age, I understand that it's a remaster and it probably comes with new, larger, more robust content, but it didn't know. The load times were really irritating. It wasn't so bad if I was going from a large zone into a smaller zone. Like if I'm in, where the hell is that place with all the high-end proper people who are talking so much with all of the, and some of the Irish jig people who are there and dancing their light away. Going into the smaller rooms, like where some of the merchants were, that's not so bad. The load times were relatively short. The instant you try to get into a larger zone, it just sits there in circles, and I'm not happy about that. So I guess it wasn't the end. I had a lot to say about that.
I will point out that that is something that is probably localized more to the Switch and the Xbox One and PS4 versions, because when I've played the game on the Series X, it was unbelievably snappy. So
really,
yeah, the new gen consoles work magic. It's pretty impressive what they could do on the new stuff.
Okay, so Switch got the short end of the stick on that. Got it. Small price to pay for being completely and totally portable.
True,
because I will say that probably the only thing better than playing Skyrim and pooping at the same time is playing Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning while pooping at the same time.
I love you, George.
I know. That's why you keep bringing me back. Okay. I wish
Cole was here.
I love her voice. I could listen to her all night, I swear.
I could listen to you all night, and I probably will.
Stop it. You're just flattering me now, and it's inappropriate. Okay, there was one other super ugly thing, and I told you about this on Messenger a week ago or something. Mm-hmm. There was a section of, and I wish I had written it down because I can't remember exactly which quest it was, but I'll try to provide as much detail as I can so that it can be linked back. There is a section during one of the quests where in order to get a door open, you have to wear a specific armor set. Once you are wearing that armor set, the door that you need to go through is opened, and then you can progress on until you get to the end of this cavern thing, and you talk to this insane woman who you go into a boss battle with, and at the end of the first drop of all of her health, she tries talking to you, and no matter what you say, she gets angry. Like, if you say nothing, she says, "I will not be ignored!" And then her health goes back up. Or if you tell her that it's not going to work, then her health is still, no matter what you say, her health is going to go back up, and she's going to pound you into the ground again. It was basically that entire quest line where you're recreating the historical thing, but the fate is changing because you're the fateless one. And my fateless one is bald with a nose ring. I just thought I would mention that. So during that quest, while you are wearing the outfit that is necessary in order to open that door, so many times, and usually at the exact same spots, when having dialogue with some of the quest necessary characters that help you progress, when you start the dialogue and you move on to the next line of dialogue, it'll stutter and then it drops you back to the Switch menu. Kaput. Damn. Total crash out. And so I thought I was going to try to be clever and figure out a way around it. So I would, after about the fourth or fifth crash of this nature, I went and did another quest. I thought, okay, maybe there's a weird variable that's stuck, or maybe it's because it's night, or maybe because it's day. I don't know. So I went and I did other stuff and came back, and I was able to get past that next section with the guy that I'm supposed to talk to. Fast forward to the end boss, the crazy lady who gets double health because she's crazy. During her dialogue, no matter what time of day it was, no matter what other things I went back to do, as soon as it switched from the first line of dialogue to the camera change and the second dialogue, she stutters and it crashes. Every single time. And finally, what I figured out was, because I thought that I needed to continue wearing that outfit, that janky outfit, which was way worse than anything else I had to wear. I thought, well, the only other variable I can think of to change is costuming. So I changed out of that outfit and changed back into my much more robust set of equipment, and the crashing stopped. That was it.
That was something, the armor.
Something about that armor set, and it's a full set. It's like robes, gloves, footwear, leggings, the etc. Something about that armor set was causing every single dialogue stutter crash. And since then, I have not experienced a single crash to desktop switch crash. It was something about that armor set. So I jumped onto Metacritic to take a look at people's comments about the Switch port. I highly recommend not doing that. And because mostly people who are complaining about the Switch port are just complaining about the same stuff that they disliked about Amalur when it first came out. Blah, 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 boring. Blah, 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 better games. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, total bullshit. This game is amazing, and people who don't think so are terrorists. Wow. So there were a lot of comments about crash to Switch desktop. And I'm wondering if by chance, maybe they were running into the same problem that I was. So it's just a bit of feedback that if you can get back to the guys that ported it, maybe there's something about this armor set that is causing all of the crashes. And if they can localize it, they can probably try to find a way to fix it. And it could be that it has nothing to do with that armor set. However, in my experience, by removing that armor set and putting on my regular stuff, the crashing stopped. So there's that.
Those are some uglies.
Those are some uglies, and they're pretty uglies. So now let's go back to the bad. Let's get this out of the way. Sometimes the controls got a little bit janky. I remember this from the Xbox 360 version, and some of the stuff I'm surprised wasn't corrected. Camera perspectives auto moving back in 2012 were not the greatest, even as much as I appreciated the fact that if you were running in a direction and you turned the control stick just enough, the camera would automatically adjust. That is cool. That is still cool. Sometimes the camera perspectives auto moving would do so at an angle that either doesn't make sense or gives you a beautiful clipped view of under the terrain. And it's like all nice and blue underneath, and the angles are all above you, and you can see your head kind of popping out of the terrain. And in some situations when this happens and it does the auto camera stuff, there isn't a darn thing you can do because all of your fingers are already occupied with, like, combat. So you just tough it out and hope that you don't get squashed because you're not able to see what it is that you're attacking. More of a design thing itself than a Switch specific port related thing. And it's something I remembered from last time, and I don't think it bothers me as much as it used to then, but I swear there are enough FedEx quests in here to keep the actual company in business for the next decade. I know you don't have to do them all, but what if you do? You don't know. Completionism is a disease, not a choice.
Dude, that's how I was the first time around with this game. I completed everything and I hit max level before I even beat the game.
Right, exactly. Like, exclamation points are a way of life. They're not a choice. Do you understand?
Yeah, you see one, you have to take care of it.
It's like, I gotta get my fix. Okay, anyway. battery consumption is pretty close to on par with Breath of the Wild. And Breath of the Wild ate batteries like it was a six-year-old with an entire box of Spree candy. There are very few games that I need to get the external USB battery pack out for, and this is one of them. So it's a 9-year-old game, and it's destroying my battery. So that's just something that was meh. Archery target lock is still really bizarrely difficult to manage. I feel like it should be easier and or possible to switch targets without having to fire the charged arrow right in the middle of it. However, there is a chance that that's just me not knowing how to control it, so I'm willing to allow for that. Otherwise, that's just a weird, janky thing that I was hoping would be easier to control in the re-reckoning port and does not appear to be the case. There is a bug in the sneak where it does not allow you to switch into hostile mode, where what will happen is you'll push the D-pad up, and under normal circumstances, you would get a countdown timer before it goes back to not hostile to NPCs. And instead of doing that, it just goes immediately back to non-hostile. You do not have an opportunity to, say, kill an NPC that's necessary in order to progress a quest. I went online to try to see if I could find a solution for that, and the only solution that I found was, well, just load an older game and everything will be fine. Which is fine for people who don't save scum to just finish the game.
True.
As it happens, I'd gotten into the habit of actually saving a lot before virtually anything because the crashes were making me nervous at the time. And now I'm just in the habit of saving before anything. So I'm constantly cycling through the limited number of available save games just to make sure that in case something goes wrong, I can kind of get back to wherever I was. All in all, there were just a number of quality of life things that I feel like could have been taken care of in the re-reckoning port that just weren't taken care of. And it doesn't wreck the game necessarily, because I wouldn't say that the game was irreparably broken in the first place. But I'm just a little disappointed that more time was not either taken or available to polish it a bit more before the modern console release. That is all I have to say on the bad front. Now let's get to the good part. I mean, right out of the gate, it is Kingdoms of Amalur.
Yeah.
On your Switch. Portable. Legally portable. No ROMs, no hacks. It's right there. On your Switch, ready to go, while you're pooping, what else do you need? The fact that this game can be played on a handheld device is the greatest gift to gaming ever. And if you haven't already gone out to buy it by now, I'm burying my lead here, you should be ashamed. You should be ashamed of yourself. The shameful shamedness of shame and a pox upon your tribe. That's how serious this is. And it's if you haven't played this game the first time around, or even if you have, it's probably been 9 years since you did, and you've already forgotten everything, so you may as well dive into it anyway. The level of gorgeous in all of the environments, and the amount of detail, and the comparative lack of repetition with art assets when held up against other modern games, there is so much detail and so much obvious care was put into the art of this game. And it only looks better in the port. It's astounding. One of the things that struck me about the original release of the game was the fact that then, as now, most of the high-budget games just started to look very much the same as you played through them. Skyrim, as an example, it just looked like the environments were reused or possibly reskinned, and it just looked the same after a while. I'm trying to think of another example. of a couple of, and it could be Skyrim that's popping into my head again. And
Dragon Age 2 was one that reused assets quite a bit and felt very
there you samey. Go. But like in some of the games where you do a quest or you have to go into a zone to do a thing, they would sometimes reuse the same zone, same map, possibly a different skin, and just to fool you into thinking, oh, this is somewhere new. I am so excited to be doing this all over again, but it looks different, so I'm just going to pretend like nothing's going on here. We know what you've done. We see you. You should be seen. Anyway, both times so far, and granted, I'm probably not even halfway done with Amalur this second time around, and I will finish it, but I don't get that same sense of everything is the same. This is boring. Every single place I've gone to looks different. And by accident, I ended up going to one of the expansion zones because I was just following my nose to where whatever happened to be happening at the time. And I ended up going into the Colossae zone and doing all of the quests down there. It was gorgeous, and it looked absolutely nothing like anywhere else in the game, and just more astounding level of detail that I feel should be present in pretty much every much larger budget game, and just isn't. So on that level alone, in terms of art assets, it's fantastic. Now, I'm not talking about creatures, because yes, you're going to fight sprites over and over and over again. You're going to fight giant rats over and over and over again. When you're in the Colossae zone, you're going to fight rogue Colossae, and they all look pretty similar. Okay, fine. You got me on that one. But the backgrounds, the views, the entire atmosphere of everywhere you are is so wildly different from everywhere you've been before. It's fantastic, and it's beautiful, and it's lovely, and it's definitely worth checking out. There's a new difficulty mode. Yes, please, and thank you. And because of the fact that I wanted to dive deeper into the game content for the review, number one, and number two, I am a wimp. I did not avail myself to the new mode, but it's really cool that they have that change for like the super hardcore people who have already played through everything the game has to offer and are looking for something that is more challenging to them. Personally, I am not playing on the easy level. I am playing on the one step up from the easy level. And there have been several situations where I have expired. And upon coming back, I have been asked very kindly, would you like the game to just switch you to the easy level just for a little bit, maybe? I mean, we're just asking. If you want to, it'd be okay. Nobody's going to tell. No, it's all good. There's no punishment. There's no jail. It's fine. Would you please just consider it? This is your 17th death. Come on. So, yeah, I may or may not have seen that window a lot. Because I'm not good at games sometimes, or I just don't always apply appropriate strategy, and I like to button mash. But anyway, I think, let me check my notes again. Let's see, I've got to look at these on the switch. What else do you need? Well, your pooping level of gorgeous. New difficulty mode. Yeah, that just about sums up everything, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, how about the fact that they're going to have new content, I believe, this summer sometime?
Are you kidding me? I did not know that.
Unless it got bumped. It may have gotten bumped. I know that they are working on new content for the game. My timeline might be wrong.
Is it getting bumped because of the COVID?
Probably.
Dang it. I hate that COVID.
Yeah, I know they are working on something new, though. So that is very exciting.
Oh, yeah. The plandemic. Yeah. Anyway, cool. I'm so glad to hear that, because I will absolutely jump on any new DLC that they happen to pull together. I figured that after the Re-Reckoning release, that was it. And the original game and the expansions that were available at the time that are now in there. I figured that was it, but if they're going to add more stuff, yes, please and thank you. I am all over it like Oprah on a glazed ham.
All right, well, $39.99 on Kingdoms of Amalur: Re-Reckoning on the Switch. What is your official verdict?
Absolutely buy this thing. Do it. Do it now. Escape your shame. You don't have to hide anymore. We've got your back.
Escape your shame. Buy this game.
Ah, I see what you did there. Yeah. You're so clever. Oh, my goodness.
I am
goodness.
Not at just all clever. I'm just
take you home and put you over
job.
My knee
I'm
and
so bad.
Thank you.
I don't know what I'm doing anymore. So, yeah, that's the end of this episode. George, thank you so much for being here, hanging out, doing the review.
Yeah.
We got to get you back on for a full episode sometime soon so you could chat with Cole, too.
Yeah, we do. I owe you one. And I'm sorry I couldn't make it for the birthday one. The scheduling just didn't work out. I had kids stuff I had to do.
It's all good. It was boring. It sucked.
I doubt that
Grant
for
was
even
here.
A second. Oh, that
I
guy.
I mean, come on.
Man,
that friggin' guy.
Grant.
I would say we should play some music from Grant, but just to be a dick, I'm going to play music from Viking Guitar instead. Love you, Grant. That's the end of the episode. Do you have any final words?